Hi, and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly Podcast. It's for the week of May 6th. I'm John Gibson, and happy Reiwa era, everyone. With me on the Saturday night is Jim Allen. How's it going, buddy?
Reiwa, what?
Who's Ray?
Yeah. Indeed, you can call me Reiwa. Okay, I'm good. How you doing, man?
I'm hanging in there. You are going to Hawaii next week, so I want to climb in your suitcase.
Nah, the wheel's almost busted. That would be a no-no.
I've lost weight. I've lost a couple pounds, a few pounds.
You have to. You have to be out there doing liposuction to get in there, buddy.
Okay. Okay, I'll do that. I'll sign up.
Get out of here. Can't we talk about baseball or something? Isn't that what this show's for?
Okay, all right. Well, on this week's show, we've got a great chat with Dennis Sarfate of the SoftBank Hawks. We're going to look at that team, look around the PL, the CL, and hit some notes before we handle some high heat. So let's start swinging.
Clearing the bases!
All right, one Heisei factoid before we get into the show. I know you love these things.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, it depends. I like them when they're interesting. I hate them when it's the boss telling you, make sure to remind everybody that it's the first whatever of the Heisei era, or the last of the Heisei era, the first of the Reiwa era, because people care. I'm going, people don't care.
We try to make them care.
Yeah, well, that's the point. You know, it was just a gimmick for most of, I mean, some of the things are kind of fun. But when they go up to the player and say, how does it feel to be the first player to strike out in the and the Rewire, and the guy say, how does it feel to take this bat and put it someplace inside your body?
For the first time, you know? In the Rewire era.
Exactly. I hope. Okay, so
you never know.
Gimmick. Hashtag high heat.
Indeed.
My factoid.
Okay, so anyway, so what's the...
My factoid.
Drop some knowledge, Mr. Gibson.
All right, so Koyo Aoyagi of the Hanshin Tigers tossed the final shutout of the Heisei era. And the reason I picked this little note is because I had a friend who loved the autumn leaves changing, much so that she named her son Koyo. And I had never, and she's from Philippine descent. So I had never heard that name Koyo before. And her son is younger than this kid, Koyo Aoyagi of the Hanshin Tigers.
Sure.
So just, and you know, I love...
Does her son throw a sidearm too?
I don't know. But you know, I love the letter K, and I had been thinking about K names for the Wonder Twins. So that was my factoid, and I'm sticking with it.
Okay.
All right.
Thank
you for that. Great. Now we're all so much better for that.
And now you know the rest of the story, Paul Harvey.
All right. So there's pretty much no need to introduce Dennis Sarfate, a dear friend of JBW, who has been on the show multiple times each season, just about since he came to Japan.
He keeps asking me when he's going to get his service. We're going to give him a service ticket. I don't know what you get, but what happens if you're on the show 20 times? What do you get? headache medicine?
I think you get about 2 hours of interview time.
I mean, like what could we possibly give somebody as a gift for 20 times on the show? You know, medical insurance?
We can give them the JBW golden microphone or silver one.
What? I don't know.
You got to work up to the golden one.
Free shrink visit? I don't know what.
So, he came to Japan in 2011, joined the CARP, and that's the year that we started doing the podcast. So, now he's recovering now from an abductor muscle injury that was suffered during the spring. And I did see him on the mound this spring, and I thought, oh, he's coming back and things are going to be, he's going to be heading toward that 250th career save here in Japan and things are going to be fine. And then that wasn't the case. And he's still recovering from that. He talks about it during the chat. He's 37. And I love to bring this up because, I don't know, just because I'm me, but I remember the moment I saw him pitch the first time in Japan, and I told you, man, you got to see this guy. He's good. And you referred to numbers and analytics and blah, blah, blah. And you said, meh. And I said, no, this guy is good. He's going to be really good. And, I liked him from the first time I saw him. And I knew it was going to be good. And you didn't. So there, I got that on you. And I'd love to remind you that. remind you of that. That Dennis has been a really good fit with SoftBank. But he probably was still, he would have been still a good fit with the Carp had they kept him. And so much so with the Lions, I think, as well, had they kept him. But he has beaten the Carp in the Japan series subsequently, so probably they regret not keeping him. I would, if I were them. But for the new listeners, he refers to three-digit players in this chat, and those are players basically signed on developmental contracts. And we probably won't see many of them, but he mentions one in particular. So let's take a listen to what Dennis Sarfate has to say. All right, joining us on the phone is Dennis Sarfate. Where are you, buddy?
I'm in my apartment in Fukuoka.
In Fukuoka, all right. First of all, thank you for joining us. We really appreciate it, you being injured and all, and watching from the sidelines here, but thank you for taking the time.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I definitely miss it, so I guess this gets me back a little bit closer.
Okay. So first of all, you're in recovery. How are you?
I'm doing all right. So yeah, I tore my labrum, had microfracture, so that's what ended my season. If I would have just tore the labrum, I probably had a chance to come back by August. I was actually throwing. The team came to visit me, and I felt like I was ready to come back, and I saw the surgeon again, and he was like, no chance. You'll ruin what I did, and he's like, you'll be back into the operating table next year. So we just played it smart, figured, okay, let's just finish off the rehab and recovery and enjoy the off season and be ready for spring. And it just wasn't that easy. I got here in Miyazaki and I was feeling good, and I got to Miyazaki and just ramping it up with all the baseball activity kind of tweaked my adductor and hip area, inflamed it. I think I threw a 70 pitch bullpen, and then
what'd you do that for?
Didn't feel right, didn't feel good, like I hadn't pitched in a year.
And we saw you in the preseason. I mean, you were close to getting back.
Close, yeah, but even then I was popping pills just to throw. I mean, it was miserable. I hurt every day. I was just trying to, you know, they were pushing me. They wanted me to be on the team on the opening day. I told them that I was trying, and then when it came down to it at the end, they felt bad for me because they knew I was trying to give everything I could. Right. I just wasn't right, and you could just tell I wasn't right. My velocity was down. My secondary pitches weren't there. I was throwing strikes, which is funny because I hadn't pitched in a year and I'm throwing strikes, but I just needed that time, and it's been such a benefit for me because I have felt way better now. I'm stronger. I'm getting back off the mound.
We can expect you back soon?
Sure. It's building up really quick. I think it's going to go really quick. So I'm setting a goal for myself is June in a game to be ready to pitch, but obviously they're playing it more, taking it a little bit easier on me, making sure I don't push it too much. Okay. But I'd say by June I should be back.
All right, well, what's it like watching your teammates play from Japan this season as opposed to watching them play from America last year?
Brutal.
Just as brutal, right? Doesn't really matter.
Yeah, it doesn't matter there or here. I mean, last year was hard for me because I saw someone doing my job, and I was proud of Mori. I thought he handled himself well. He was definitely they don't win without him last year. I definitely think all the years I've poured into him, knowledge and stuff on pitching and just being his throwing partner and stuff, I saw him grow last year, and I think he is what he is now because of the time and the work that he put in with me, and I was just so proud of him. But it's still someone's doing my job, and to be here this year now, it's like I'm back, and you know, I see the fans when I go to the train station. It's like everyone's so happy to have me back and they want me playing, but it's like I can't go play. And it's like almost like you have a Ferrari in the garage, but you can't find the keys to go drive it. It's kind of brutal.
Yeah. Well, you know, we wish you the best in getting back. So now I joke that your team has the equivalent of a baseball team that's out with injuries and probably more. How do these guys keep winning?
I have no idea. Well, you know what? It starts by who they draft. The Hawks, I've said it since I first joined this team, mm-hmm. they draft unbelievably well. Think about all the three-digit players, Senga, Takuya. Geez, I'm going to leave off so many other guys that were three-digit players. Kamimoto now is stepping up. But all these guys that they took as three-digit players and what they've turned into, Ishikawa. And you're like, wow, they do a really good job of scouting these kids and giving them three digits. And all of a sudden, you see them and they're two digits and they're superstars, you know? I mean, if you would have told me that Senga was a three-digit player, I would have been like, you're crazy. You know, and just to see what how they've come from all of, you know, all these young kids stepping up. But, yeah, you look in Chicago every day I show up, I'm like, oh, man, we have like an all-star team down here. We could literally take them on, I think, and we can add another team to the league and just be rehab guys from the Hawks.
So I was going to ask you because I'm thinking there's a lot of talent. We always talk about it, but I was wondering what that third level of the team looks like. So you're telling me there are stars down there waiting to shine.
Yeah, there's some good players. The one kid I really love is Richard. I don't know his last name, but he's half American, half Japanese. His brother got drafted by, I believe, the Mariners. Okay. Out of college, had Tommy John this year, but Richard
Sunagawa. Sunagawa. Yeah,
yes. I've seen this guy hit balls over the hitter's eye here in games against the other teams that come and play. Big guy and just works hard. The most polite kid I think I've ever met, but I think he's going to be really good. I think he'll be a guy that can middle of the lineup power guy, and wow. He's big. I mean, he must lift the weight room up over there.
Wow. And you're saying that, and I've seen you. Okay, so yeah. You're scaring me.
So they got a lot of good arms. I mean, a guy that hasn't even been up in spring training, I know that was Sumiyama. He hurt his ankle in some stupid drill that I always say that these drills always hurt more guys than do good. And he hasn't been the same since. So I'm kind of watching him throw. I want to give him my own input on what I think is going on with him. But he's got an unbelievable arm and a great future. Bando's is a good pitcher. Just so many guys that I see play, I'm like, man, these guys are really good. But, you know, you're going to need these guys because Uchi's not getting any younger. Machi's not getting any younger.
Right.
Imamiya plays 140 games a year, and it's like it's starting to take its toll on him. You know, he gets a lot of time off now, guys. I mean, I think they pulled in the last few games after the sixth or seventh inning.
Yep.
You just can't play 143 games every year and do infield, outfield, and do batting practice, and do early batting. You can't do it.
Yeah.
It's just impossible.
Yeah, and they try, and some guys play for a long time. Well, I wanted to ask you about that as well, because when you guys didn't win the league title last year, but the team beat the Lions in the postseason and then won another Japan Series title. So what's the real focus as you go through the regular season?
Well, the real focus, I've always said it, they don't care about the Japan Series. The real focus is winning the league. Everything else is just, they say it's a tournament, so you can get lucky and you can win. You know, when you play a whole season and you finish in first, that's the prize. So I know that the team was disappointed finishing in second, but I also think they handled it and they said, all right, well, we're going to go out there and we're going to try and win this thing, which I think you should always play for the championship, whether you finish in first, second, or third. It should be who's the best in Japan. And this year, I think the goal has to be to win the league. I mean, they spent a lot of money on the guys that had good years. They brought in, you know, pretty much the same foreigners.
Right. Yeah.
They're gonna have to win this year. I know Despa's a free agent after this year. Rick's Vandenhoek's a free agent after this year. So this is the year to do it, unless they're gonna totally rebuild and bring in new foreigners.
Yep.
You know, I know I'm gonna be here for the next 2 years after this year, the 2 years after that. So my goal is just to help whenever I get back and then get my 4 days I need to get a non-foreigner and then just, you know, play next year as a non-Gaijing in 2021, non-Gaijing, and then hang it up and go home.
Okay. All right. Well, speaking of going home and finishing up, you have 16 saves that you need to get to 250, and I got it right this time. I checked again today to get into the Golden Players Club. But you also have 48 holds, and this brings me to Naoki Miyanishi of the Fighters. He has more than 300 holds. Now, how do you feel about adding holds to the Golden Players Club, because these guys are important, what they do.
Heck yeah. I wouldn't have had all those saves if it wasn't for Sho and Maury. You get 300 holds. I feel like that should be good enough. I get it. Holds are easier to get. I mean, you can go
not
and throw
all the time.
Not all the time, but you can get face one guy and get a hold.
Correct.
I think I've had one out save in all of the years that I've been a closer here.
Mm-hmm.
And I can't tell you exactly if that's the truth. That might be two, but I mean, we've had lefties, you know, Kayama, he gets one batter holds all the time. And I'm like, okay, I get it. You know, they add up, but that's longevity. You get 300, you're averaging 50 for 6 years. I mean, that's pretty impressive.
Yeah.
And you don't get 50 holes a year. So he got, what, 40? Say he averaged 40 a year. So, you know, he did it for almost over 7 years straight of 40 hole. I mean, it's pretty impressive. I think you have to include those guys. Is Miyanishi a Hall of Fame pitcher? You know, I don't know. I don't know his stats. For me, I feel like they're never going to let foreigners in the Hall of Fame anyway here.
Right.
You know, I've talked about it before to other reporters, and even to, you know, I remember talking to some of our international scouts and stuff, and it's like, even if I get the 250 and I ended up finishing with 300, you know, when I get back and next year and the year after I get to 300, I still don't think I would be put in the Hall of Fame here. I think it's a prestigious thing that they leave just for their naturalized citizens. Like, they don't, and that's fine. You know, I'm not playing for the Hall of Fame. If they want to add it to, you know, add me in it, great. I just want to be a good person, a good teammate. I want to do good for the city that I'm playing in. And at the end of it, hopefully that I did more on the field and people remember me for that, but also for what I did off the field. And I hope they remember me for that as well.
Yeah, good stuff. And yeah, you have done, I don't know that we've reported on it enough, but you've done some stuff off the field. I have couple more questions. One, we recently had an interview with Zealous Wheeler of Rakuten, and he said the difference between SoftBank and some of the other teams, including Rakuten, isn't so much the talent, it's doing the little things. So how much is that indeed the case?
I mean, our payroll is well above everyone else's. So, yeah, they're paying guys that come in. The little things, I think we do them right. We've had some great coaches that were really sticklers. Like when Tora Goi-san was here, bunting and defense, holding runners. I mean, we have Kai, but I'll tell you what, Kai doesn't have that great of an arm.
Mm-hmm.
It's how fast he gets rid of it, and it's literally how fast our pitchers are to the plate. Not taking anything away, Kai is an amazing catcher, but the little things we do, if we were all slow to the plate, he would, you know, and you see it. Sometimes when Vandenhoek starts, guys run all over him, and it's because he's a little bit slower to the plate because
mm-hmm.
with his mechanics, that's just what he is. And so, you know, they do the little things right, the getting guys over. I feel like there's just so many guys that give clutch hits. It's never the same guy. I mean, Gita, without Gita in the lineup, it does hurt. It exposes a lot of holes in the lineup.
Mm-hmm.
And then you take, like, Graciel out, you take Akira Nakamura out, and now you're like, okay. But and then I look and I'm like, this team's still winning. And it's because guys like Machi step up, Uchi steps up. You still have Despa, who's dangerous. And then you get Imamiya, who hits it. And then Uebayashi is just like, the talent is so deep.
And Kenji Akashi hitting that walk-off home run and doing the backflip. Yeah.
Yeah, I loved it.
Which was cool.
I loved it except for the fact that I realized he just had back surgery. And I'm like, probably not the best thing to do, but...
Hey,
you know,
he had his one shining moment, man. You got to take
right.
it.
He had to take it. But, you know, I think Zealous is right. We do a lot of things right. And I feel like when we win games, the other team didn't do the little things or they would have beat us. I mean, it's happened a lot. There were so many times I remember watching games that we end up winning, and I'm like, we had no business winning that, but the team didn't do what they were supposed to, and we did.
Right. Yep. Seen that a lot. All right. So you are the last interview for us of the Heisei era, and you're going to be on the first episode of the Reiwa era. So thank you very much for joining us, man. We appreciate it.
Thank you for that. And I'm staring right now at my Fukuoka Tower, and it's got the Japanese flag on it. So I know they're all excited for it. I know it's a new beginning for some people, the way they're thinking, and it's an end to something else for other people, but hopefully people just enjoy life and live it one day at a time, not worrying about too much what's going to happen.
And you too, you take it one pitch at a time, one step
at
a time.
That's right.
All right, bud. Thanks a lot.
All right, man, I appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
All right, man, I'll talk to you.
All right, bye-bye. Okay, thanks a lot, Dennis. Always appreciate, love hearing from you and talking with you, and get well soon.
Yeah, it was fun. I mean, I want to go back to the three digits, you know, because I think, what did he say? And I'm thinking, oh, I see. As soon as we started talking, I'm going, oh, he's talking about developmental. I know he's talking about developmental players, but it took me a few iterations before I realized he was talking about how many how many numbers were on their uniforms.
Ah, so even you were confusified.
Well, that's not much of a leap for me. I live in a daze. And yeah, but the three digits, and I'm thinking, yeah, interesting. That was interesting. And he threw one name out there, which was interesting, which is Shuta Ishikawa, and Ishikawa is a guy who was actually a top college pitcher who got hurt the end of his sophomore year, and so he had Tommy John surgery in college.
Okay, so that drops the value.
Came back.
Yeah.
Right, exactly. He was coming back from injury. And so his senior year was like a half a year, and basically nobody wanted to take a chance on him. But, you know, if you're the Hawks, very briefly, the way the draft system works is the teams can take up to, I think, 120 players in the draft, all 12 teams, and between the regular draft and the developmental draft.
Right.
And basically, the Hawks are there. The Hawks actually didn't take the most people last year. The Giants did. They don't take the most people every year, because I checked to see where Kodai Senga went in the draft in the year he was drafted. And I think there might have been 100 people drafted, and he was about 94th or 95th.
Okay.
And there were three people drafted after him. But basically, the Hawks are like, after everybody's done, the Hawks are just saying, okay, we'll take this guy and we'll take that guy. And wait, we still got a shopping basket here. We're not leaving.
Right. We still got room.
They just fill up the shopping cart with these guys that they're going to pay about $30,000 a year to be on the farm team.
Mm-hmm.
And they've got about 40 guys. I think they've got 25 or 26 guys on the developmental roster. So they've got a huge number of players, and a lot of these guys are—I don't know what their philosophy is. I don't know the Hawks scouting people, but they do certainly pick up some. But he's right. I mean, they've got a lot of guys who were developmental guys. That means that all the other 12 teams had repeatedly passed over these guys.
Yes.
And like Senga, I think a lot of them are from Kyushu too, where they, you know, they have good local representation.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yep. All right. Well, since the interview was on the long side, just give me a couple points that stood out for you.
Okay. So first of all, I think the interesting thing with Dennis, and I think just one thing really, I love Dennis's rules.
Rules?
You know? Well, you know, he was talking about the kids, and he says, like, you know, those drills. Watch out for the drills. And he kind of reminded me when he started talking about those things. I think I know a couple of other ones. It's like he says when he's pitching, and I don't remember if it was Ishikawa or Shota Takeda who told me that, I think it was Shohei Uesaki. I said, what'd you learn from Dennis Sarfati? And he says, you know, don't get too forward in your delivery. You know, don't let your body get too far ahead of itself.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm thinking of Dennis's rules. Don't get too far forward on your delivery. Don't go to meetings. be careful of drills. He's kind of like Japan's modern day Satchel Paige.
He's Dennis the Menace on the team.
He's got all these words of wisdom. So that's, I think that was the thing. I think that was the thing that struck me was about the whole thing was his little words of wisdom, okay. Pearls of wisdom.
There you go. He's firing pearls and wisdom at people. Yeah. I mean,
how about you?
There were a bazillion things I think we could discuss, but I think the top thing the top takeaway for me basically was the fact that he was saying that the team drafts well. And what I always think, as soon as I see an unproven player for the Hawks take the field, I think about what this player went through to be walking out there and take that position, whether it's him getting an at-bat or playing in the field. And that the competition is so intense on that team because there are so many, as you talked about, there's so many players, there's so many or so few opportunities, actually. And if you can't get it done, somebody else gets an opportunity to try, at least. So when you see a rookie like Hiroshi Kaino, their first pick last year in the draft, come in with very little fanfare and set a rookie record for most consecutive scoreless outings from the start of his rookie season. And you see guys like who started out as a developmental player like Takuya Kai, the catcher. He talked about the Kai Cannon and Kodai Senga. And there are just so many players that it just starts making sense that these guys are going to perform. They're unproven, but they're not untalented. And so when he talks about these guys and how they draft well, we just say, well, they've been acquiring talent, but we really haven't gotten into the hows and the whys. And we've talked about the fact that the Hawks are strong because obviously they've been winning all these Japan Series titles the past, 4 out of 5 years. So it's not a surprise. And we keep talking about it. But when you hear someone inside the organization talk about a guy whom none of us has heard of, I have not heard of Richard Tsunagawa. And the only reason his name rolled off of my tongue at the time that I was talking to Dennis was because I remember I was thinking about doing a story. This was preseason and going through and looking at all the players who have like a half Japanese, half
foreign. Oh, geez. There's so many now.
Yeah, there's so many. And I was thinking about maybe trying to talk to them one at a time and ask them how they went through.
Jeez Louise.
And I had gone through all of, this is in the preseason, I had gone through all the teams, looked at the pictures. I even heard there's another guy who with Hiroshima, actually I think he's not with the team anymore. I think he got moved. But he doesn't look half Japanese and half foreign, but he is.
Sure.
And speaks fluent English and all this stuff. So I was thinking about doing that and this player, Richard Tsunagawa, I thought, okay, yeah, I remember him because there aren't that many with the Hawks, so it just kind of rolled off my tongue. But you start thinking about all these guys, and I think the biggest draft pick that they have made in the past, I don't know, I guess I'd have to say 10 years, is Kenta Imamiya. And in a very small package, he's their best player. Right now, he's their best player.
Sure.
And, I didn't hear about him as a high school player. Now, that part of that is I don't watch all that much high school baseball, but, you know, they saw what he could be, and he's making flash plays and highlight reel plays almost on a nightly basis. And he's doing it defensively. He's doing it offensively. And I remember when Munenori Kawasaki went to the States, we didn't know. We really had no idea who really was going to take over full time at short. And Imamiya has just been great. And I don't know that he gets enough respect. So when Dennis said they draft well, I sat down and I said, you know what? He's right. And now you've got all these guys.
No, they are. They do. Yeah, they do.
But that not only is just what you said. They bring shopping carts. And they bring paper bags and they bring plastic bags and they put as many players in there who have a nugget or any kind of just the slightest bit of talent and they try to polish them up and get them to be as good as they can be. And then you...
Well, they have, they have a really deep and, you think about teams' cultures and, you think of, just two teams off the top of my head, ironically, two teams that moved, the Nippon Ham Fighters and the Hawks.
Mm-hmm.
So the Hawks moved to Fukuoka in 1989, and you know, they were not popular, blah, 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 and they had a lot of trouble. And one of their early managers became, it's funny because they had a, they had an early manager when things were not really going well. They picked this guy who was a former Lions guy, and I don't go into the details, but his name is Riko Nemoto. And the interesting thing was, I had this conversation about where, how did the Hawks get where they are with Sadaharu Oh about, oh geez, 10 years ago or so. And, okay. And he said, so much of this was due to Nemoto basically turning that organization into a deeply professional, creating a deeply professional culture. Everybody in that front office thinks they're contributing to win, takes some sense of responsibility. They have some sense of responsibility that they are contributing to wins on the field, whether they're selling tickets, arranging to have the stadium toilets cleaned, whatever.
Right.
And I think that has stuck with the team, and it's just gotten deeper and deeper. And I think having O as chairman has had a huge impact on that, because I absolutely can tell you that nobody wants to go up to O and say, you know, I'm the one who dropped the ball.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Right.
And so I think that's really a huge thing with them, it's because there's so much respect for the organization in that team. You know, when they were setting up their new minor league facility in Chicago, which is some distance from Fukuoka, I think they bought it because the land was cheap. And they said, people in the training staff, you know, they said, this is the kind of thing we, if you were a major league team starting a training facility, this is what you would do, but it's cheaper to do it before you move in. Mm-hmm. It's cheaper to do it as part of the plans. And the Hawks were like getting these kind of opinions. What do we need? So when they started with the best. And you know, they don't mess around. There's none of this, oh, what's it going to, you know, payroll's one thing, but oh, what's it going to cost us? That's not something we want to spend money on. And I think they of course have that, but the attitude is, what's best for us?
Yeah, is it going to make us better?
Yep. Yep. And absolutely, guys like Imamiya, you know, I don't know what they saw in him, but I'll tell you another thing is he's a, having talked to a lot of the Hawks guys, mm-hmm. and having talked to Imamiya a couple of weeks ago, he really impressed me just with his attitude and his professionalism just in the chat, which doesn't mean anything. Because there are guys who are good talkers.
Right, right.
But he seems to be the whole package.
Certainly. And for those of you who are going to say, well, what about Yuki Yanagita? I love him too, but he gets injured more often. And you're talking about a shortstop. I know that Yanagita plays center field, and they even moved him to right sometimes or left field last year.
Of course, having said that, Imamiya missed like 30 games last year.
He missed 40. He missed 40. Hurt. Yeah, 42 or 43. But that was the first time in a long time. He, since 2012, has played in at least 126 games a year. So, and he's playing shortstop. So, you know, you can stand out there in center field and pick your nose a lot of times, but the shortstop can't do that. But anyway, so that was the biggest thing. So to move on and continue to talk about the Hawks, and they're proving that their depth is all over the place, not just on the mound, not just at one position on the infield or the outfield. They just stick guys out there, and it just, even, you know, Keizo Kawashima's getting that bat the other day, and he gets a hit and knocks in a run, and I think he knocked in a run, but he gets a key hit.
He got on base, you know, he knocked in a big run, he scored a big run, he's playing defense everywhere. He's really, you know, he's the scrapper, but even the big guys are scrappers. Even the big guns. Well, I mean, yeah, Yanagita doesn't really know what a two-strike swing is. You know, everyone's as big as he can make it, but that's his game. But the point is, that team is full of guys who, A, play the game right, play the game as hard as they can, play the game as well as they can, and are pretty darn good.
Agreed. And now they're starting to get some guys back. Last week, the joke was that they had lost an entire baseball team. And so now,
Yurisbel Graciel came back.
Alfredo Despaigne is back.
Miranda's back. Well, he came back and pitched one game. I don't know if he's back or not, but.
Right.
Yeah.
And, you know, Nobuhiro Matsuda, who hit his 250th home run on Friday, and they had an extra inning victory over the Eagles. Really exciting game, 12-11, which included, I don't know if you saw this, probably not, but there was a former Hawks player named Ayatsugu Yamashita, who he hit two home runs in that game. And as he was rounding the bases for the second home run, he shouted something around third at Matsuda. And I don't know if it was some trash talk or not. I tweeted it out. Was that trash talk? As if so, that's really cool. Because he's a former Hawks player. It was his first two-homer game. If he was shouting some trash talk, that would just be awesome. Because I didn't think so either. But it was a shout out of the side of the mouth, kind of a side-eyed look. So I didn't think it was friendly, but I don't know. Maybe he said Atsuo, which is something that Matsuda screams when he hits home runs. So I don't know. Okay. I don't know, but it was pretty interesting. And
well, Machi could get on your nerves unless you're as caffeinated as he and I appear to be.
I like the hot foot dance when he swings and fouls a pitch off. You know,
he's kind of wired.
He's
kind of intense. So I think he could certainly get. I love him. I personally love him. He's just a real sweet guy. But I could see how he could get on people's nerves.
Yeah. Well, you know, that game, the 12-11 game, was a game. If you don't like the Hawks, you probably were really frustrated from them coming back and winning that game. And then you had the day before, or a Thursday, you had Kotaro Otake, one of those triple-digit guys, as Dennis referred to in his recent chat. He got his first win on Thursday, but it's his first win in five starts, but his ERA is 0.72. The guy's allowed three runs in 37 and a third innings. It's ridiculous. And you think if you pitched that well for that team, that you would be 5-0, and you would be the pitcher of the month for April, for sure.
He's in the Randy Messenger Club. They haven't been scoring for him. I mean, he lost a 1-0. His one loss is a 1-0 game.
Man, he's trying to get tickets to get into the Randy Messenger Club because three runs, you know, over five starts, that's ridiculous. But and so they won a close game that night. So they're proving it. These guys are for real. We talked about it in the prediction show, and they're seven games over 500 already. And again, I think they've gone through an incredible spell of injuries, and they still came out, you know, looking like smelling like a rose here with all these victories. So it's just, they're just too deep. And I think they're going to break away from the pack, if there is such a pack. I mean, and for you newer listeners, I don't really consider the standings anything that you should pay attention to at this stage of the game, if you will. So I just look
Come
at the
on
records.
Now, guys. There, take notes. Take
That's
notes.
That's right. I just kind of look at the records and see who's over 500, who's under. And as you look at the Pacific League, you've got the Hawks with seven games over 500. But then you've got three teams with identical win loss records, 14-14, with the Lions, the Fighters, and the Eagles. And I think probably the Eagles, that's surprising because they had started out so hot that when I decided to look at the records, you know, closely this weekend, and it's only Saturday, so yesterday, I couldn't believe that they were over 500 at that time, and then they lost today on Saturday, so they're 500. By the time you listen to this, they might be over 500 or wherever they are. But looking around the rest of the Pacific League, I'm looking at the Lions. And last year, I proclaimed that no team that's going to have a +4 ERA as a team is going to win the Pacific League. And they shut me down on that. So I'm never going to say that again. And in fact, the higher the ERA, the better. Because this team, I'll tell you what they do. They put you in a torture chamber if you're a pitcher, the way they score runs. And they don't miss Hideto Asamura, who left in free agency and went to the Eagles in the offseason. They don't miss him at all.
I don't think that's true.
I'm just
either.
Not seeing. In fact, they seem more dangerous. And I don't know if it's because it seems like everyone at nearly every spot in the lineup is producing. They're effective. somehow they're productive. And I don't know.
You know, we talked about you. You said something astute about the swallows a couple of weeks ago. So I keep reminding you, it's not that I'm surprised that you say something astute because you often do, and I often don't catch it because it's too astute.
Because you don't listen.
But the one about the swallows was so good that I keep going back to that when I watch the swallows, and I think, man, and you know, the swallows, and it's not the swallows, the lions are the swallows' evil twins. They're the Pacific League twins, because those guys at bats are so good. I mean, not always, you know, guys get, you know, he missed a bad, you know, he missed a fat pitch, or he was looking, you know, he got fooled or something, but
right.
Just by and large, you know. And I got my favorite grinder is Takumi Kuriyama from years and years and years, and he's like the leader. He's the leader of that little rat pack up there. It's like
the grind club. Yeah.
I mean, just can't not get rid of us. And they're not grinders. They're grinders like the Oryx Buffalo's little slap hitting guys. Except they're gonna draw a zillion walks.
And they're gonna work counts.
They're gonna really drive the ball. So they're gonna, like the swallows, they're gonna make you pay when when they outlast you and they out concentrate you at the plate. So they're really, in that respect, you know, the Lions games are meant to be fun.
Well, yeah.
They're meant to be like
meant to be fun.
You know, I think if you went to MetLife Dome and you see a 1-0 game, you ought to ask for your money back.
I think they'd be standing outside by the train station handing out 100 yen, you know, drink tickets to everybody and apologizing.
Apologies, right? Because you go there, you expect to see some runs scored, some, you know, base running and some offense and some, you know, kind of mediocre pitching.
Yeah, we apologize for only winning 1-0 tonight. Yeah, I think it's Tomoyo Mori who has really done, I think, what he just picked up where Asamura left off last year. And Mori had a good season last year. I mean, he didn't hit anywhere near what Asamura did in terms of his batting average and driving into
runs.
Well,
he did, except...
He hit 275. Yeah, 275.
Right, but the problem was that was because whenever he DH'd, he was lousy. I mean, he was like the league's worst DH.
Well, I'm not looking into all that. I'm looking at the overall numbers. And right now, he's...
Yeah, but I'm just saying that whenever he caught... He was, you know, he had an OPS like 1,200 when he was a catcher.
Yeah, well, his OPS is 1,084 as we speak now. The batting average.
So he's picking up where he left off last year, as far as I'm concerned.
All right, well, that's not what the overall numbers say, but the overall numbers right now say that he's at 367 with 28 RBIs. That's second in the PL, and I mean, he's just doing everything, and he's catching well too. So.
Oh yeah, the other day, you know, when the fighters shifted against him,
uh-huh,
and he went like, "Oh geez, outside pitch, like I'll take that."
Oh yeah, I did see that. I did see that bat, and
I thought that's like the easiest hit he's going to get this entire season.
Well, one of them.
Oh, you leave the left side of the infield open. Okay, thanks.
Yeah, sometimes I don't think that makes any kind of sense in Japan, and I think we talked about that when we had a question about it. Maybe a couple of years ago, what about the extreme shifts in Japan? And we said, you know, the batters are too good. They're going to take what you give them, and they're able to make adjustments, and they don't care. And not everybody is looking to drive the ball, so they're just looking to take any kind of...
Well, they have options, you know. The thing about Japanese baseball is they have options.
And they use them.
A lot of guys can bunt. A lot of guys can go the opposite way because they've been trained to do that. You know, there's none of this nonsense in Japan about, oh, let's just polish your skills so you can be a great power hitter, so you can be a great strikeout pitcher. No, you've got to do everything right. So even if you're mediocre, it's better not to have any holes.
Right, right. So I don't...
Okay, so...
Yeah.
So I hope you understand I'm being a little sarcastic, but that is
well, yes,
in a nutshell, the Japanese way is to not have... you know, is to have multiple options and sort of be good at everything. And, you know, if you have a weak spot, you're not as good. You know, you can hit 50 home runs, but yeah, who cares?
Exactly.
I mean, and again, that's extreme, but people act like that sometimes.
Mm-hmm. So, the moral of this story is I don't care what their ERA is, and I'm not looking at their defense and all that other stuff, and whatever nondescript pitchers who go out there and give up runs for them on the mound, because they're going to score and they're going to be in every game. Just like today, Ernesto Mejia comes off the bench cold, hits a two-run home run off of Yuki Matsui of the Eagles, gets them even, and they win it in extra innings because you can't keep them off the scoreboard because there's just too many bats. So they're going to be in a lot of games. They're going to torment a lot of pitchers. And, boy, when they get a hold of the Central League teams that are struggling, like the Bay Stars and the Dragons, it's just going to be – there's going to be blood on the Central League walls.
Hashtag high heat.
Wow. We thought you were kidding about them being Lions, you know?
No. And, some of these Central League teams will be thrown to them. The Lotte Marines, I did want to make one note about them. They seem to be struggling on the mound more than I thought they would. So a shout-out to Zach Ikuma, who told us on the PL Prediction Show, because he went to camp covering the Lotte Marines, and he said he couldn't see their starting pitching holding up and that was going to be a problem. And that seems to be the case. And so if you look at through Friday's games, their quality start rate, 29% of the time, is 28.57, is the worst in Japan. And I thought it would be better. They still have time to turn things around, but obviously Mike Bolsinger, Ayumu Ishikawa, they just haven't been what they were last year, and they even sent Ishikawa down to work on some things, and he's back up, but I don't know that it got all that much better. He still seems like the same guy. He gives up hits. It's not like he throws clean innings all the time, but he's struggling with something, and then Bolsinger just hasn't been the same. So I don't know, but
you know, at the beginning of the season, we were tracking the number of Rockton Eagles players who were getting thrown out on base, and we have a new leader in the runners sacrificed category, and it's now the Lotte Marines have taken over the top spot. The Eagles have been kind of minding their manners now
for a week. Just for a week.
Well, no, but I mean they were losing, like, at the beginning of the season they were like losing like 15% of their runners on bases, mostly through being caught stealing, and the Marines are doing it without being caught stealing. The Marines are a really good base stealing team. They're 20 through Saturday, excuse me, through Friday, they were 22 out of 29, but they have a horrendous numbers of guys are getting thrown out on the bases. And here's the bad thing. Not only do they lose the highest percentage, they lost the highest percentage of runners, guys running into outs on the bases, but they're 11th in NPB with actually having runners on base in the first place.
Eagles, so it hurts twice as much to get them thrown out, right?
The Eagles on the other side, the Eagles have had a lot of guys on base. So it's, they're just, okay, cut out the base stealing, which is probably what happened. They said, okay, no, maybe they put a white line in saying that you will not take a lead past this point.
Well, I there was one game, and I tweeted out the I didn't see every inning of the game, so I said, well, the Eagles have no fewer than four guys have been thrown out on the bases today, and one of them was Okoye, who I think hit a double and was trying to stretch it into an extra base because there was a runner who scored, and so he thought he would just take that extra base, and he got thrown out. And that's I've seen that a lot. Ginji Akaminai got thrown out, just trying to push it and get to the next base when there was a runner on ahead of him. And I'm thinking, man, you guys, don't you know you're slow? And not Okoye, but some of the guys who are running and getting thrown out should grab an anchor before they leave the dugout and make sure to hook it to a base so that they don't go too far.
Okay.
I have no business trying to get to the next base.
Here's your base.
They need to take a taxi or something because they're not going to get there.
So anyway, so the Marines have replaced the Eagles as the worst base running team. And they're not a bad base running team. They just I don't know that, but they'd have to be awfully darn successful at taking extra bases to make up for that number of outs. And my guess is they haven't.
Okay.
So anyway, moving along.
Moving on. Let's look at the Central League really quickly here, and the streaky. Well, I don't know which streaky team I want to talk about first. Probably the Bay Stars, we should probably pick up there, because when last we left you, they had lost 10 consecutive games, and they stopped that skid, and then they won a couple in a row, but then they are losing regularly again, unfortunately. And I don't know. I like I said last week, I think when you start to look around at the losses and the pitching, especially the starting pitching, you start to think, well, who's the guy? If Shota Imanaga there, who's pitching like their ace this year, so we're going to proclaim him that. If he can't get them out of a streak, who's the guy who can get them out? Because nobody else was pitching really well. So it's a rookie who's making his fourth start, and that was Shinichi Onuki, and he got them a victory. 5-1 was the final score over the Yakult Swallows at Yokohama on, let's call it May 1st, so nobody will be confused, but that was Wednesday.
Reisei Day 1, and somebody... Reiwa. So Reiwa, Day 1 of the Reiwa era, and somebody sarcastically said on Twitter...
Was it you?
Okay, it was not me. They said... Okay, smarty pants, who got the first sacrifice bunt, this being Japan, of the Reiwa era? And I said the Bay Stars starter because I couldn't remember Onuki's name. It was Shinichi Onuki who got the first sacrifice hit of the Reiwa era. Congratulations. May many more follow.
Thanks, dude. So, but then they lost a couple in a row, and they've struggled at they're struggling scoring runs. They're just struggling winning games. They have that classic, they can't score runs when they get a good pitching performance, and they can't stop the runs when they hit well. So they're just struggling at every turn. And I don't know, I'm looking, you know, they threw out a 19-year-old rookie the other day who pitched really well, very effectively at Hanshin for 5 innings, and the first pitch from Yuki Kuniyoshi as the reliever in the 6th inning leaves the park. Uemoto jacks it out. So, I mean, you know, and then the score's tied, and they end up losing that game 2-1. I think it was extra innings. It was Yusuke Oyama who hits a double that I honestly thought Kazuki Kamisato misjudged the ball at the wall. Did you get a look at that? I know you haven't seen games, but you didn't see any replays, huh? So, yeah, he goes back and he jumps in the air.
Oh, I did see it. I did see that one,
And the ball lands, you know, if you're looking, you obviously like, we have the camera shot, so it was to his left. And, yeah, and I'm thinking, well, why did he jump and he was nowhere near the ball? But then I realized this past week, well, these games that have been at Koshien this weekend, I've seen a lot of guys jumping for balls that actually they don't have to jump for. Yoshio Itoi jumped for a ball that he caught today that he ended up not having to jump for. Someone else out in left field jumped for a ball that they didn't need to jump for. And I'm just wondering if something's going on with the wind or the sun. It just seems like outfielders at Koshien right now are having trouble judging the wind conditions or whatever. There must be some kind of weird influence. But anyway, I thought that ball should have been caught, and it wasn't. So, you know, they're just bad luck right now for the Bay Stars. So hopefully they can get out of that. But I keep looking, and I think we talked about this a little bit before we actually went on air to tape here, and I just look at the Giants, and I said it before, that not only did they look in cruise control right now, at the moment they seem to be toying and just... Tatsunori Hara, the manager who's back in his third stint. Is that the way we should say it? His third stint? Or he's just,
sure.
He's back after his second break, after second intermission.
Tatsunori Hara 3 or something. Yeah, I don't know.
He's just throwing guys out there now just to get him some work and maybe to rest some of his other players, because they just look like they're better than everybody else, even when they lose.
Yeah, they look pretty good when they lose. I mean, they got some fight too. They don't. They certainly look. They seem to look more comfortable being behind. You know, when they had the horrible losing streak a couple of years ago, it'd be like they'd get behind and then they'd get buried.
Mm-hmm.
And they'd win big, they'd lose big, and we were talking about the Giants in the past having funky combinations of runs scored and allowed. They'd they'd score a lot more than their opponents and they wouldn't win, and they'd score a lot fewer than their opponents and they'd get lucky and win. But what you see is what you get right now. They appear to be playing very confidently, and like they just think they're going to win, and they have a lot of talent, which we knew. My concern with the Giants is they brought in so much new talent this year in terms of big names. But you know, Uakuma is on the farm team.
Right, I was going to mention that they're pitching.
Koji Uehara is on the farm.
Yeah, their pitching
team
can probably get better if you think about it. It might end up being better at the end of the season when these guys do get on the mound.
Right, and Scott Matheson's not playing.
Exactly.
So
you named all the guys I was going to name. Why? Stop looking at my notes. Don't do it.
Okay, I'll turn. You got to turn off your camera then. You know, I've got the spy mode on there. Gotta cover it up with tape or something.
Okay.
Okay. So yeah. So I mean, they cruise control is a good word. They're just sort of cruising along. They're going. You know, we could do 70. But we don't need to. We're gonna stick 55, save gas, you know, let everybody else burn themselves. You know, let everybody else, as you said, playing with the opposition, they're letting everybody else burn themselves out in the first 3 months of the season.
They are.
And they're gonna step on the gas and say, see us, suckers.
Yeah, I think so. It seems inevitable. They've got
Except, and I would say the one exception there is the Carp. I think the Carp have absolutely have the stuff to stick with them. They haven't shown it yet, but I'm not convinced they're a bad. They're even a mediocre team.
No, yeah, I think the Carp, they had that stumbling start, and they're looking better. They won the first two games of this series, so they have an opportunity to sweep on Sunday. And I mean, obviously. I was the only one who picked him to finish out of the playoff picture this season. I think everyone else predicted a first or second or at least third place finish for them. And I tell you one thing, one guy I'm really impressed with, and it just happened all of a sudden, but Tsubasa Aizawa, he goes up to the plate, and you just, the way he's so poised and confident, the way he stands when he's taking at bats now, you just assume he's going to get a hit or make good contact with the ball, because he just seems like he stepped into that Takahiro Arai type kind of role where he's the team leader and he'll just do whatever it
takes. Yeah, I know, and he's not even like the team's senior catcher. They still got Ishihara, this guy who played on the 2009 WBC for Japan. I'm going like, dude.
Yeah, but and you look at Aizawa, and seriously, he goes up there now, and he's taking swings, and he doesn't swing at a lot of bad pitches, and he gets good at bats, makes good contact, and he swings confidently, looks poised. He just looks.
You know, I see a lot of things. I mean, Kosuke Tanaka had a horrid start to the season, and I've seen some good things from him. Xavier Batista did not get off to a good start, and he's hitting everything now as we expect. Yuhei Matsuyama. He's, you know, he was hurt. I think he got concussed or something, or he had a contusion or something, and he was hurt, and he's back. I don't know if he's playing well.
He pinched it the other day.
They've got a lot of them.
He is.
Yeah, and they had Ryoma Nishikawa playing left field, which is sort of like, okay. But, you know, and I've laughed a lot about Takayoshi Noma's credentials, but he's like the... He's right now. He's one of these guys who didn't look like he was ever going to play.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he was going to be the Carp's Kanemoto, and he was going to be have good games. He was going to have good games, and he's a real athletic guy. So you figure he's going to play a little bit like Shota Dobayashi also, but now he's looking like the guy everybody said he was going to be. But he had never played that way before, at least in my opinion. And I may have badly misjudged it, which are, I should say, I probably badly misjudged it. But sometimes when people do badly, you really don't know why.
That's true.
Is what I want to say. So if people do great, then you know that they can play. If you know, over a period of time, but if they play poorly, you don't know what it is that's keeping him back. You know, it could be his manager, it could be his his father's sick, or he's got health issues, or
something,
bone spurs, or whatever. Right. You never know what might be holding a player back. You know, unless it's been like, you know, he's got 3,000 at bats and he's hit 100 and. Okay, but it's a rare case for anybody like that. But Noma, I said, no. He just looked like that.
No, man.
He just looked like that player I never thought would play, and he's playing up to expectations so far this season. So give him credit for that. If he slips back a bit, well, you know, we're all human.
Right, right. Okay, well, speaking of the Carp, now I have one note that I'd like to get to, and that's the replay situation, and we had a situation involving the Carp, but before that, we had a game involving the Chunichi Dragons, and I learned something on Pro Yaku News at that time, and that was back in April, and the first situation was an umpire in a game at Nagoya Dome who was not looking at a base, and he decided to make a judgment on a play at the base when everyone saw him looking into right field, and Chunichi skipper Tsuyoshi Yoda came out of the dugout, and the first thing he did was start to argue about the call. And what I learned on Pro Yaku News from former Swallows manager Mitsuru Manaka, who clearly explained that once you go out to argue a call, then you cannot ask for a video review. And I call Yoda the Jedi skipper. I don't know why, because Yoda wasn't a Jedi, but it just sounds right to me.
Sure he was.
So the Jedi skipper came out and he argued the call. And soon after that, Junji Ogawa, the skipper of the Swallows, came out of his dugout and started to argue and bark to the umpires about the fact that Yoda first argued the call and then got a request. So cut to today with the Hiroshima Carp and a play at first base. Ryosuke Kikuchi goes running at first base. Throw was on an infield grounder. The throw was high. It was Nakajima who was playing first base, I believe, and he jumps in the air to catch the ball, comes off the bag, and he lands essentially in that running area. Kikuchi,
the runner's laying down on first base.
So Kikuchi is slowing down. He's moving to the inside part of the infield, inside those two lines, that running lane. And he slows down and basically almost goes into a slide, but he goes past the bag. So when Kikuchi realizes that the throw was high and that Nakajima was going to have to tag him, he goes diving back at the base. Now, that really wasn't necessary for him to do that, because when you're running at first base, it's okay to run through the bag as long as you don't turn and go towards second, then you're fine. Correct. He didn't go towards second. All he did was go past the bag, but barely, and because he was in a half slide or a sliding position, he thought he had to get back to the bag. Your buddy, what's his name? Atsushi Kitaka was the umpire.
My buddy, I've never spoken with him, so it's kind of harsh. So it's, I think it's unfair to him to call him my buddy.
Okay.
I don't want him to suffer from guilt by association.
Well, okay. You don't want him to suffer. Okay. Neither do I.
Yeah.
Neither do I. Question?
No.
So he decides to call Kikuchi out. I believe, now looking at the whole play, I believe, first of all, that Kikuchi didn't have to go back to the bag and that he didn't have to slide, and that even though he slid, he was safe.
Right.
They went back and, I'm sorry, first Ogata comes out of the dugout from the Hiroshima dugout to argue, then there's mm-hmm. a request. And remember, this year they don't announce the requests anymore. They don't grab the microphone and say, we're going to look at it and review. They just right. go and do it now. Up till last year, they were telling everybody in the stands who made the request, because sometimes it's a manager initiated a request and sometimes it's an umpire initiated request on foul balls. Well, then we didn't know. We don't know. I don't know. I didn't have time to read any stories today. But anyway, long story short, they blew the call at first. They blew the review. And Ogata comes out, and you can't argue these decisions that are made on review. Well, he wasn't. I don't know that he was arguing. I think he wanted to understand. And you could see he had both hands out. And he's like, he's basically in the okay, just wait a minute kind of a gesture. And I think he wanted to know what they were reviewing. Were they reviewing that Kikuchi didn't turn and go towards second? Were they reviewing that he was out? I don't think he knew. So anyway, he got ejected. So again, I don't mind slowing the game down to a thousandth of a second to get something absolutely right. I don't think it's necessary. I think we need to get on with the game sometimes. Some of these reviews are ridiculous, but in that case, I think the fans deserved to know what was being reviewed, and I think the manager for sure deserved to know what was being reviewed and why and what the decision was. Was it because Kikuchi had they determined that he decided that maybe he was going to try to go to second, which he didn't, or that he was out, which he wasn't? Because anywhere you look at it, I don't think he should have been out. And I think the reviews sometimes they don't work. And it's very, very, you know, I saw another play earlier in the season with Imamiya with his foot clearly off the bag at second. And they initially called it out and they made they did the review and they stood with the call. And I thought, well, they're not even getting it right now. This is ridiculous.
I can't really add to it other than all I can think of is Kitaka has a, although to be fair to him, and I think this is fair, he's been out of the spotlight now for several years.
He has.
And that's a good thing.
That's a good thing. It is.
Yeah, because he went from about 1997, from 1997 to 2004, making headlines about once or twice a year, because he just got something very tiny mixed up, or he wasn't obvious, or he didn't communicate something well, and people on the field didn't know what was happening.
Right.
Sound familiar? Yeah. So okay, it's been 15 years since he was kicked off the Japan Series umpiring crew for helping delay game one of the 2004 Japan Series for about 35 minutes.
That's why he's your buddy.
Poor guy. Mr. Kitaka, I apologize for John.
So, I apologize for John. Don't you apologize on my behalf, buddy.
Why? But you're insinuating that he would be friends of mine and we've never met. So anyway, the interesting thing here is that, yeah, it sounds like the kind of thing that used to bite him in the butt a lot, and where there's sort of a confusion. You know, when there's confusion reigns, that was his sort of domain.
That was his thing, yeah.
That was his thing indeed.
Well, and I wasn't surprised. I saw this thing take place today, and I had no idea mm-hmm. who it was until I got home and watched the news. And then that wasn't enough, so I brought it up on YouTube and watched the whole 7-minute scene, and the announcers were saying, it's Kitaka, and I'm like, well, that's no surprise. That doesn't shock me at all.
Yeah, but again, it has been quiet. It's sort of like, I always kind of wondered if he had retired or something.
I guess it's like a dormant volcano, and it exploded again, erupted again. Yeah,
well, you know, no, I think to be fair, I think he has really... he's really worked to improve those things, and that's not easy because the things, you know. But here's the other thing: because of the replay, although I do recall there were some issues with replay last year or something with some calls he made. But again, with the replay, it's hard not to, you know, you get that feedback that you didn't used to get. So I think it's made a lot of the guys better umpires. And I hope so. But I hope so too. Today didn't work. Okay, well, okay. Go learn, live and learn.
Okay.
And this is, I think, the second time Ogata has been called out after a video review. I think he's the only manager in Japan to get called out after to get thrown out after a video review, whether it was his fault or not.
Yeah, I'm not sure about that.
I don't know, but he is. It's definitely the second time for him. So.
Okay. Well, live and learn, but they won the game, so that's really what's the most important.
Indeed.
Let's go to Field and Questions. All right, so again, our buddy Rocky in Oakland has a question, and he says, I'd like to hear more about the parasols the Swallows fans break out and the origin.
Ah,
parasols.
Good question.
I call them umbrellas.
Parasols. First of all, Rocky, I have to apologize. You must be referring to the parallel universe in which the Swallows fans carry parasols instead of umbrellas. Okay, is that snarky enough? Okay, maybe not. Maybe too snarky.
It's what I
call sarcasm. Indeed. Anyway, I apologize. It's a great question, and I had to remember... short aside, I became a Yakult Swallows fan because one of my students in 1986 to 1988 in Hamamatsu City in Shizuoka was a Swallows fan since the late 70s, and he instructed me in the ways of disliking the Yomiuri Giants and
you
lots
had to get
of
lessons
Swallows
in that?
Lore. No, but he gave me more, you know, fuel for the fire.
All right.
So
grasshopper.
Anyway, part of that story was the story of Mr. Masayoshi Okada, who was a larger than life, small guy, but larger than life figures. He was kind of the mayor of the Jingu Stadium outfield.
Mm-hmm.
The head of the Yakult Swallows support groups. He'd stand on a crate and lead the cheers, and he was just a wonderful guy. And I probably went to about several dozen games when he was there before he died. About 15 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, he started a lot of the Swallows traditions. This one started in 1963. When the Swallows were still owned by the National Railroad, they were the Kokutetsu Swallows, and they moved to Jingu Stadium, and they had very, very few fans. And so one day, the story is it was Okada said to all the, you know, the 100 or so people in the outfield,
friends and family,
the Giants are coming. The Giants are coming tomorrow, or the next home series is against the Giants, and we don't have enough people in the stands. So let's all bring umbrellas, and we'll look like there's more of us. and really, that's how it started. Well, apparently, the first game against the Giants, and they put up a banner. Actually, I don't know, there was a meeting, but they had like a sign. You know, they were having a sign around the outfield request, and so apparently the story is that the first game against the Giants, when people were requested to bring umbrellas, three people showed up with umbrellas.
Oh gosh.
So anyway, and then and what happened was the tradition. Took part at the same time as these white plastic umbrellas were becoming popularized in Japan.
Mm-hmm.
They were being mass produced, and so it was a good timing. And although for some people, so for a long time white was the color, and some people thought it was undignified for men to carry white umbrellas, so they wanted to bring black umbrellas, but people said, well, if black is, you know, black is a kuroboshi, it's the color of a defeat in Japan. So it took a long time to weed out those sort of, you know, to blacklist the black umbrella guys. So that's a story, and that's basically the story, but yeah, become popular, and now they sell all the merchandise junk. And I don't think my wife bought one. I've never bought a souvenir umbrella. I just bring one.
Right. So. And so now they usually raise them and sing a song, right, when they score runs, right?
Well, they sing the Tokyo. Yeah. That's the thing with the Umbrellas, is that they're part of the Swallows' run scoring and seventh inning stretch
celebration.
So, exactly. It's their seventh innings, and I think this is interesting because I think they might be the only team where their seventh inning stretch song is the same as their run scoring song.
Hmm. Interesting.
I hadn't thought about it, but somebody. So please educate us if I'm wrong. But most of the teams have different. They have a team song and then they have a run scoring song.
Yeah, maybe the Swallows podcast guys, if they're listening, can fill us in on that. All right, great question, Rocky. Thank you very much. Mm. Anyone else who has a similar question or any question at all, send it to yakyujohn@gmail.com. MP3 it, and we'll play it on the show. Keep it less than a minute. You can hit us up on Twitter @JBWPodcast. With the hashtag High Heat, or hit us up on the Facebook page. Hey, how was our first show of the Reiwa era? It was awesome. I do say
so. It was indeed.
All right, guys, we will talk to you next week. Enjoy your baseball.
See you at the ballpark.